Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. Thanks so much for listening today. If this sounds like the Eurozone version of Groundhog's Day, no wonder. Greece is probably out of money again, and the rest of the continent is afraid again of what happens if Greece defaults, given how interconnected the Eurozone is, and this is having ramifications over here again. So with us now is Chris Giles, economics editor of the Financial Times. He joins us from London. Hi, Chris. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hello there.
So the new developments apparently are that a Greek official told Reuters this morning that the country has enough money to last until October before it would need its next bailout. Today is September 12th. Is this the same as when you quit a job, all you need to do is offer 2 weeks' notice?
Well, I think the worry is that that's as much money as they have to keep going. They need to have the additional bailout money, which has been agreed, but it's conditional. So they have to show the rest of the world, that includes the International Monetary Fund in Washington and the rest of Europe, that they are meeting their side of the deal. And if they do that, then they will get this money. But the problem will still go on because this is a long-term problem. And Greece is just one part of the Eurozone's wider problems, with Spain and Italy being much, much more important because they're much, much bigger.
Since we have been here earlier in the year, did Greece not keep its end of the bargain? The last bailout, which was incredibly controversial, was a lot of people who casually follow this thought supposed to patch things up.
Yes, well, in lots of ways, they haven't kept their end of the bargain. This is essentially they haven't introduced the changes in their economy they said they would. Now, they've said today that this is part, they still intend to do these, but there's just been some delays. It's just taking longer than they thought. But also, the other thing that's gone wrong is that their budget deficit, the amount the government borrows, has been larger than anyone had hoped it would be. That's not so much their fault. That's not the government not doing something. It's just that their economy is in even worse shape than we thought. And at some point, the worry is that either the government won't keep their side of the bargain, or the rest of the world will think it's just throwing good money after bad in lending more money to Greece. And if that happens, then a default is possible, at least.
Why would a default, in some people's eyes, be better for Europe and the world than further bailouts?
Well, if people think that in the end it's going to default, it's better to default early than late. So I think that's the only way it's better, because a default is not going to be pretty, that's for certain, because the Eurozone is a very interconnected market, and if one country can default, then it's pretty clear that other countries can default, and other countries are much bigger and much more significant than Greece. And if that was the case, then the whole of the euro area and the single currency across Europe would be under some jeopardy.
Listeners, anybody want to call in on the crisis in the Eurozone and the impact here? Is the whole structure of European Monetary Union, while each country can set its own fiscal policy, misdesigned from the start? Do you think that the United States is immune from this? Stocks are, I gather, mixed so far in this country today, though they were plummeting in Europe on the European markets earlier. Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, if you have a question. This is so complicated that many of you just want our guest to explain a little more of it, perhaps. Chris Giles, economics editor of the Financial Times, joining us from London. Or with your thoughts, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. Is there a larger verdict here about the whole structure of the Eurozone?
Well, I'm sure there is. I mean, ultimately, the Eurozone as a whole is in not bad shape. Its budget deficit is much smaller than that of the UK, where I'm sitting in London, and much smaller than that of the US. And its debt is lower than the US and the UK. So if you take all the countries together, the Eurozone should be the safest place in the world for investors to put their money. But that is not the problem, of course, is that the Eurozone is 17 different countries. and it might be, as a whole, a safe place if you pooled everything together. But that essentially means Germany and France and Finland and the Netherlands bailing out some of the southern European countries where confidence is much lower. And that's a political problem, not an economic problem. And so it's this combination of politics and economics which is creating a crisis at the moment.
John in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, John. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, thanks. So in Greece, you retire at 55 unless you have a dangerous occupation. One of them is radio broadcaster. You might get germs from the microphone, so you retire at 50. How long does the rest of the world have to... I'm 70. I can't retire. How long do we have to subsidize this?
Does he have his stats right, by the way, Chris?
He's pretty much got his stats right. These are changing. These are some of the laws that are changing and causing the problems in Greece, and it's one of the reasons why the German public in particular don't want to lend Greece any more money, and are making it very difficult for the German government. So while you can see a solution there of some lending in the short term, there's big things that have to happen in Greece, and there's absolutely no question that this crisis is going to be toughest for Greece, because they've got to make big changes, and they can't have a situation where people retire at 55 because, frankly, their economy can't afford it.
Is radio host defined as one of the hazardous professions?
That is a part of your caller's fact that I have no idea whether that is okay. Maybe,
yes.
But maybe you'd have an idea whether it's a hazardous occupation.
Oh, it's hazardous, all right. Just answer your phones one day. But no, seriously, the retirement age is popular among the people. I mean, this is a big problem, right? We remember the big protests in Greece earlier this year. So the problem is that the elites want one thing and the workers want something else. And, you know, maybe what the workers want isn't fiscally sustainable, but it's politically very, very difficult to change.
Exactly. And this is something that takes time, but Greece hasn't got time. Its population has to understand that for many years it was living a lie, and it was having a lifestyle that it simply couldn't afford. And a lot of its statistics, all of its problems started because the previous Greek government had been concealing a lot of the debts from the books and not complying with international regulations on how to publish your public finances and your debts and your borrowing. And when they actually opened the books, truthfully, they found out that Greece was in much more in debt than anyone had realized. And this is why it suddenly became a crisis. And the Greek public have to realize that they can't go on living like they did. But in the meantime, it's probably the only thing that the rest of the world can do is to try and tide it over to get it into a more stable position, because if the rest of the world doesn't, they might be the losers in the end.
We may have a clue as to the categorization of radio hosts almost seriously here. We just looked this up. This is from July. The Greek Ministry of Employment and Social Security announced that about 120,000 Greek workers would be removed from the list of workers in hazardous and unhealthy occupations, thereby allowing them to retire at 50. Excluded from the lists will now be models, hairdressers, speakers, so maybe that includes radio hosts, domestic helpers, and some specialties directly related to tourism. Models and hairdressers on the list of hazardous occupations. Did you know that?
Yeah, I had no idea of that, and I don't think my heart goes out. My heart doesn't bleed for them that much, as they might now have to retire at 55 and not 50.
Hairdressers... Barbers working around, you know, those rooms filled with hazardous chemicals in the air all day. Maybe that one is hazardous. Francisco in Brooklyn, originally from Spain. You're on WNYC. Hello.
Good morning, Brian.
Hi.
I'm kind of concerned, but I've been in New York for 27 years, and I'm planning to go back home again with my son.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm being told Spain has a 20% unemployment right now. Things have never been so bad over there, and I'm concerned if Spain. My question to you, I guess, is if he thinks that Spain will default with the economy, everything that's going on over there.
I think if things improve, then the chances of Spain defaulting are very low. But no one wants to invest in Spanish government debt at the moment, and unless that changes, if the interest rates that the Spanish government have to pay on its debt rise to 6, 7, 8, 9%, and they follow Greece down this line, then it would be very difficult for the Spanish government to pay its debts. Now, I think that's only going to happen in one circumstance. That would be if the Eurozone itself crisis reached such a stage that actually the Eurozone was beginning to fall apart. That is possible. It's not likely at the moment, but it does need the political will of everyone in the Eurozone to ensure that doesn't happen. So it is something to keep watching, because I don't think it's reasonable for anyone to say that this couldn't happen anymore, because clearly it could.
Chris Giles with us from the Financial Times in London, talking about the latest developments in the Eurozone crisis and what they mean. And today we're also hearing, Chris, about a country that hasn't really been talked about during this crisis, France. Why are French banks so tied up in the Greek crisis?
Well, ultimately, because they own a lot of Greek government debt, and they own a lot of government debt even more so in Italy and in Spain, and because the prices of that debt have been falling, then it makes the losses, or the potential losses, for the French banks rather large. And there is a bit of a fear that after the last financial crisis of 2008-2009, while U.S. banks raised a lot of money from private sector markets to shore themselves up, and so did U.K. banks, those in France and Germany in particular didn't do quite as much. And so they're in a more vulnerable position when this crisis is underway. And so the links between the banks and the countries themselves, you can almost not distinguish them apart. So if the countries in Spain, Italy, Greece, Portugal are in trouble, that means the banks in France and Germany are also in trouble.
You know, there was a conversation on our program, The Takeaway Today, comparing the way in which European banks are interconnected with one another to the situation here in 2008. When banks in the U.S. were deeply connected so that the whole system was threatened by the collapse in one bank. But is that true, or is there a fundamental difference between synthetic collateralized debt obligations and Greek sovereign bonds?
Now, ultimately, the situation between the banks in the Eurozone is very similar. So were you to find one or two banks going down, then that would put pressure on lots of other banks. The big difference, apart from there's two differences. One difference is it's not certain yet that the sovereign debt of European governments is nearly as bad an asset as collateralized loan obligations or CDOs were in the US, so the losses should be smaller. And the other difference, that's the good news. The bad news is we don't have one single government in Europe. We have 17 different ones in the Eurozone, which makes coordinating any rescue plan far, far more difficult.
Right.
So you have at least...
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Karen.
Sorry.
No, so unless you can have an agreed policy, preferably in the Eurozone, but probably also including the rest of Europe, and maybe also getting crossing the Atlantic to the US, because US banks hold a lot of European assets themselves, so the whole world would not like a complete financial crisis to start in the Eurozone. We really are in many ways all in this together.
And France owned those bonds before the bailout or as part of the bailout?
No, the banks owned them before the bailout, and the reason the French banks would have owned bonds of Spanish and Italian governments well before the bailout, precisely because they were paying just a little bit more interest than French or German bonds.
So the enticement market.
Yeah, so when people thought there was no risk of anything going wrong in the Eurozone, it was worth buying Greek, Italian, Irish, Spanish, Portuguese debt, because you've got paid just that little bit more. Mm-hmm. But now everyone's suddenly woken up and thought, hey, there's a big risk out there. Everyone's diving out of those. But the banks have got them sort of left holding bonds now, on which if you mark them to market, if you looked at the current market prices of them, they've been sitting on quite big losses.
Frank in Babylon, you're on WNYC. Hi, Frank.
Hey, Brian, how you doing?
Okay.
I just have a quick question. Why was the Eurozone even created? I mean, what was the advantage to countries like Germany and France and others? And I know, like, Great Britain stayed out. I don't know if Switzerland is in it, but What's the advantage and why did it begin?
It's a great question. To these more stable and wealthier countries, why was it in their interest in the first place, as they saw it, to get involved with countries that may be weaker, like Greece and Portugal and so forth?
Ultimately, it was very political. There was an economic reason, which was that currency movements between European countries were seen to be pretty destabilizing, particularly in the early 1990s. And there was a thing then called the exchange rate mechanism, which was a sort of where to try and reduce the volatility between European currencies. And that blew apart in 1992, 93 and 94. And they wanted to look for an alternative and decided that the only way to stop speculators blowing apart currency pegged systems was to have one currency. Now, Germany and France and the more financially solvent countries originally thought it would be essentially for the northern European countries, Germany, Netherlands, France, Austria, all would get together. But politically, that became impossible. It became impossible to exclude the countries of southern Europe in particular. And so ultimately, when it was launched in 1999, there were originally 12 members of the club, including Spain, Portugal and Italy. Greece wasn't a member until a little bit later.
Tim in Baldwin, you're on WNYC. Hello, Tim.
Hi, Brian. I've been talking to myself for a while, and I need to talk to somebody who can maybe give me some feedback on this one. It seems to me that the problem that we're having in the United States and in Europe is a problem of taxation more than anything else. Taxation that's used without a graduated income tax, taxation, for example, on the sale of goods, it discourages people to buy. Certainly a value-added tax discourages people to buy. What it does is it taxes the buying and selling of goods and services. It's a wrong road, it seems. But a graduated income tax recognizes a fundamental economic reality that all income is derivative on economies, on the national economy. In other words, I don't get paid in potatoes or chickens or eggs. I get paid in dollars that the government prints and that the government, meaning not just simply the U.S., federal government and state governments, but the entire society supports and creates the value of my dollar. And I earn dollars basically by doing construction, building things. And that's one way of doing it, and there's many other ways. But I would like to compare, like, people like myself, doctors, lawyers, radio announcers, people who provide a service and get paid for a service, they have a different degree of dependence on the economy than, let's say, a person who might be a stockbroker, a salesperson, a baseball player. We all are dependent, but they're far more dependent.
Therefore what?
And therefore, the graduated income tax simply recognizes the degree on which their income is dependent on the economy.
All right. Tim, thank you very much. Does that apply to Europe? Do they have a different system in most of Europe than we do with respect to a graduated or progressive income tax structure?
Well, European taxes are, there's two things different to them relative to U.S. taxes in very broad terms. They do have more graduated income taxes, and taxes in general are higher. They also have value-added taxes, so there's a generalized sales tax on all goods and services. So they have both sales taxes and income taxes in almost all European countries, and the sales tax is actually mandated across the whole of the European Union's 27 countries at a minimum level of 15%.
So how does this all connect back as directly as possible to Tim and Baldwin doing his construction work and anybody else in this country? Is it that French banks are heavily invested in Greek debt, as you said, and U.S. banks are heavily invested in French banks, that kind of thing?
Well, the way it all connects back to the U.S. is through two mechanisms. One are all the financial linkages between banks and investments, so that if you had a blow-up in the Eurozone, that would transmit itself across the Atlantic in exactly the reverse direction of the 2008-09 blow-up in the U.S., which hurt Europe just as much as it hurt the U.S. through the financial sector. So there would be a financial panic almost certainly in the U.S. because people in the U.S. would be losing quite a lot of money on investments held in Europe if the Eurozone blew up. And then if the Eurozone also moved into a very difficult position, had a nasty recession, a very deep one, then the goods and services bought by Europe from the US and from the rest of the world would be much lower, and then that would cause a global crisis, just like when the US had a problem in 2008-09, that transmitted across the world equally rapidly. The thing is that both Europe and America are enormous economies in the world, and actually they're quite a similar size. So the Eurozone combined has more people than the US, and the economy, even though people are slightly poorer than the US, so the economy is about the same size as the US economy.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. We will follow what happens in this drama in the coming days. Did this get resolved today? I know there was so much drama over the weekend about whether this new bailout would actually come, and there was a central banker who resigned, which was considered a major split and an aberration and a break with tradition and all of that. Did that all get resolved? Are they now going forward with another bailout?
No, there's nothing's been resolved yet, so we're sort of pretty much in the same position we were in on Friday. There's meetings going on all the time. There's another big meeting at the weekend coming up. The difficulty is that the parliaments of Europe haven't even pushed through the agreements that they agreed they would do at the end of July, because these things take time when they have to go through 17 different national parliaments. You know how long it takes to get things through Congress? Well, it's got to go through 17 different Congresses. So they have an agreement. It hasn't been enacted yet. If it does, things might calm down a little. But in the meantime, things are very, very volatile.
Well, I can tell you this. We'll definitely do a follow-up segment later in the week on the list of hazardous jobs in Greece that allow you to retire at the age of 50. And we'll maybe have to create our own version of a hazardous New York City area jobs list and see what benefits should come along with those lines of work. But we leave it there with our guest from London, economics editor of the Financial Times, Chris Giles, explaining the latest in the Eurozone crisis and some of the underlying ideas. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Meanwhile, look who's moving across the border for work. Americans. Stay with us.